This episode of Cooking Issues is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company that has been offering organic stone-ground products for decades. Their flours and whole grains are the highest quality and are minimally processed in their stone mill in Oregon. Visit bobsredmill.com to shop their huge range of products. Use the code COOKING25 for 25% off your order. That's cooking and then the number 2 and the number 5 for 25% off your order.
I'm Souther Teague of Amoria Margo and a co-host of The Speakeasy right here on Heritage Radio Network. You know, my favorite thing to do every week is to come here and be on the show. I have lots of jobs. I am a very busy person. And I do this because I love it. I get to sit down and talk to all my heroes for about an hour every week. It's incredible. And I hope that you enjoy it, making a great effort to share with you. And we'd like you to share back with us. It's our summer fundraiser, and we'd love for you to donate at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. You can click on the beating heart, and you can even choose shows that you'd like to donate to specifically. And you can also choose a recurring monthly gift. And for all that, we'd be greatly appreciative. Thank you so much.
This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to, like, I don't know, 12:45, I don't know, like 1 o'clock, from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn! Joined, as usual, with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing,
Stas? Good.
We got Dave in the booth. Dave, how you doing?
Good.
And America's favorite punching bag father.
Oh, God.
Peter Kim.
I feel like this. I'm that guy in WWF when they comes out, like everybody just boos. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
you're the
watch out for the metal chair.
And I'm somehow, and I act oblivious to it and go around and pump my fist in the air nonetheless, even though all the kids are like, boo.
Yeah.
Eat it up.
Peter Kim, boo.
So which wrestling character are you?
I don't know. We need to look up the most hated.
Let's see. Who was the most hated one?
When I was a kid, it was the Sheik was pretty hated.
Yeah.
The Sheik. That's old school.
That's later though.
I'm thinking
more
yourself.
The Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan era.
No, Sheik was
Jake the Snake
that.
Roberts, like.
Yeah, but like, yeah, so like wasn't Rowdy Piper was a heel, wasn't he? But people liked him, but he was a heel, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, there's a point at which, well, Hulk Hogan's been on both sides, right? So he flipped
sure,
over.
Sure, yeah.
Are you Hollywood Hulk?
Yeah. Well, my spandex underwear says so.
Yeah. Oof. But like, are you good enough? Or do
family
you have
show,
to,
Peter.
Do you have to pre-perf everything so that it rips That's off right. properly? That's a trick. Like, if you got the real muscles, you don't need to pre-perf your clothing to rip it off. It just rips off. I have to put snaps up the side of my pants to get that to work.
I like the image of Hollywood Hogan before each match, like meticulously, like snipping out little pre-perf in his shirt.
Yeah.
To get it right. I've got to get this right.
Got to rip it exactly the right places. So, Peter, you and Dave, you will enjoy this story about Nastasia Lopez that she doesn't even know I'm going to tell.
Ooh, juicy.
Getting ready.
Yeah. So check this out. So, like, there was a business, called, the name of the business, first of all, as listeners of this show will know, somehow if you ended up at this podcast and don't know what's going on, like, I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, apologies.
Yeah, but Nastasia and Mark Ladner opened a quick service pasta restaurant called Pasta Flyer, where my son happens to be working at this very moment.
He's rolling meatballs.
Oh, well, apropos of the story. Did we tell the story about when he had to peel the garlic?
And he started crying.
And jabbering in Spanish about how he hated peeling the garlic. And he thought that, like, the whole restaurant was only going to do one quart of garlic. So then, as soon as he finished that quart,
he was I'm done.
Someone was like, shaboom, gave him the next quart. And he's like, nah, apparently, to the merriment of everyone around him.
Yes.
Anyways, so I walked by. And so, like, on the literally the same block was another startup Italian quick serve concept called Meatball Obsession. P.S., Meatball Obsession. It says home of meatball in a cup. I didn't realize, first of all, this was a phenomenon that it could be a home of, but let's just say, right? Meatball in a cup phenomenon. Anyway, unfortunately for them, they closed, but Nastasia, low quality individual that she is.
Mm-hmm. How'd you know it was me?
Oh, come on. So I'm walking past there today on the way up from the bar. More on that later. I'm walking on my way up to the thing, and for any, like, what's funny is that people on the street might think this is genuine. Only you, true listeners of Cooking Issues, will know where this comes from. There's a pasta flyer notice plastered like a band is coming to play at Webster Hall. There's a freaking plasters of pasta flyer notices, and here's what it says: "We miss our neighbors too. Need meatballs? Come to Pasta Flyer."
Wow.
Wow.
Deep. Oh man.
Meanwhile, the entire town.
The thing is, Mark wouldn't let me post it. And he's like, unless it's nice. And I was like, okay. And so.
Yeah, Nastassia, I guess in her mind, she's like, obviously not obsessed with meatballs enough. Obviously not enough.
So Nastassia is the kind of person who goes looking for a new apartment in the obituaries.
Oh, hey, look, I got to be honest.
A new wardrobe.
That's how I got into the Manhattan. That's how I was able to purchase an apartment in Manhattan was literally posted looking for dead people and found one.
Jackals. All of you. The whole lot of you.
Well, look, here's the thing. There's only so many slots here in Manhattan. And you know what? One of the ways you get one of those slots is somebody dies. We all do it.
Yeah, it's
you
a circle of life.
Yeah, it's the circle of rent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, whatever. Yeah, so we
I would love to stumble on a dead person's Manhattan apartment.
Well, so here's how it works. Here's how it works. What you have to do is you have to find a neighborhood that is in transition, right? So like a family style neighborhood where an entire, because a lot of neighborhoods in Manhattan, all of New York, are built up around communities. And the community grows up, lives, and dies in that community. A lot of times though, the children from a particular generation will start moving to a new community. This is like the succession of neighborhoods, which Peter, actually, you could talk about if you want, how that affects food and food and culture. It's one of the major aspects of New York City life. Is how these communities can move typically from lower Manhattan areas or, in specific now hotspots in Brooklyn and Queens, and then they radiate to different neighborhoods as they become more affluent, et cetera, et cetera.
Dave is like updating the power broker on the spot for us.
Anywho, so my whole neighborhood changed, and all of who used to live in my neighborhood in lower Manhattan has moved to Williamsburg. And so when the parents of those people die, as they started to do in great numbers in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s up till today, all those apartments come up for sale because none of the kids want to live there. They're all living with their own families in Williamsburg. And so they're for sale and they're not going into the family. And that's how stuff works here. You got to, find the next neighborhood where, people have moved elsewhere. And when they die, they're like, do you want to live in Ma's apartment? No. Just cash out. Get the money. We'll split it. We'll split it among the three of us.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ma.
That's right.
You know what I mean? That's how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meatball obsession. We miss our neighbors too. We miss our neighbors too. And Nastassia all the time is like, meatball obsession, meatball obsession, meatball obsession.
So can we take a moment to congratulate Dave on the opening
of
Existing Conditions?
We are finally open.
Finally open. I that was the most asymptotic bar opening.
No,
wait,
you know what?
That's the word?
Well, it was asymptotic.
Well, the assumption there is we would never actually
college boy.
Yeah, that was my hope.
The joke on asymptotic is that you never actually reach it.
Yeah.
So, like, in the limit towards infinity, we open, but that we
you're
never
always taking
actually
one
open.
Tiny step closer, but never.
I thought the joke was going to be putting the ass back in asymptotic.
Oh,
nice! Wait, somebody should put him on the
you're
show.
You're welcome.
Nice, Dave.
He is on the show.
Yeah. Oh, I see. That's a good word.
Anyway, congrats, and for what it's worth, I mean, I went on Friday, and it was amazing.
That's a lie. Peter is a good friend. Peter is a good friend. Unlike Nastassia, Peter's
go
a good
on Friday.
Friend.
You did go on Friday. It was not amazing.
Yes, it was.
Really?
The drinks were amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
People, let's talk about this. People, friends and family, if you're doing a restaurant or a bar, please, friends and family is so important. Our ticket times were ridiculous. Like, the ticket times were just bonkers. Our POS system wasn't up and running. Yeah, so the first day of Friends and Family, I can't believe we only did 2 days of Friends and Family. I would like to do more. Look, everything's a mix, right? It took us so long to open, as Peter said, asymptotic opening. Oh, you'll enjoy this. I'll tell you after. But like asymptotic opening, it took so long to open, and we're burning through like personnel and money. Nastassja, you're familiar with this, right? And so then you're like, okay, well, how many days of Friends and Family do you want to do? Because then you're burning through wages, like hard wages, and not just like prep wages, but hard wages and product.
I brought my own.
And you're such a terrible person.
Wow. Really? You brought your own wine? Oh my God.
For day
only
two.
Only you.
It's the worst. You know what? It's like almost like.
I saved you product.
It's almost like.
Maybe everybody should have done that. Come to the conditions with their own wine.
Yeah, yeah. The corkage fee is I hit you over the head with a bottle.
Exactly.
But the thing about it is, I think if Nastassja was like a normal civil person, no one would know what to do. True. You know, like if she literally on Friday, she came in and ordered wine and so beat the server down that he rung it in, even though we had no wine in the building.
Wow.
Because our wine order didn't come until yesterday morning.
Impressive.
She also heard, oh, kitchen slammed. We'll have one of everything, please.
I know. I came to the table, and she's like, what'd you get? She's like, one of everything. I'm like, you would. You would.
Well, because I knew it wasn't all going to come. They were going to forget, so we were going to get some, which is
oh, so you take the kitchen down with tickets?
No.
Yeah. The kitchen, like, anyway, the point also is that in Friends and Family, it's harder because in a restaurant, the assumption is everyone's going to have a full meal. So people order stuff. The kitchen's prepared for that. At the bar, the assumption is you're only going to do about 25% of your sales in food. But in a Friends and Family, people overorder food. So the food ticket times we soaked the kitchen in blood and then wrung it out that night. You know what I mean? In terms of like just slamming it. And compared to the first night where people were actually spending money there, like it was a lot smoother, a lot smoother. But anyway, but also, you know, we spent so much time doing our like, you know, cold wells and cold plates and carbonation and all that like razzmatazzmal stuff that, you know, it was hard for us to fit in like the normal staff training. Like here's how the ticket prints, you know, all the stuff, and all that stuff's super important. Your POS goes down, which, you know, point of service, which also stands for I just always, in my head when I say POS, I'm thinking.
Piece
of shivo, you know, sack of shivo. And I'm like, you know, it's like if that thing goes down, the customer experience is totally ruined. And they don't know. They don't know why. You know, if you've never worked in a restaurant before or never had to use a POS system before.
When you hear our POS is down, you're like.
What does that mean? I don't care. I don't care. Like, you know what I mean? But like. Or you're like, why can't you put $15 on mine and $32.85 on his? Oh, come on, man. You know what I mean? It's like, you know how many buttons I have to push and like thingamadoodles I have to do, and then I have to keep. POSs are a pain in the butt, right, Nastas?
Mark won't even use it.
Yeah, lucky. That's how I was at Booker and Dax. Now I have to work, dude. I have had to, for the past like 3 nights, I've had to work the floor at existing conditions. I hate working the floor. I hate
Jenny
and
I told you we were gonna do it.
Yeah, right.
I was
imagine Nastassja, Brian. Order something or don't. It's all the same to me.
No, I can go back into that mode.
I was amused to see you on front of house.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I just not feel, a natural fit for you, man.
I feel unsafe. Yeah. It's like the whole thing, like, you know, like hanging out in the kitchen, I feel safe. Hanging out behind the bar, I feel safe. But
front of house is all about small talk, man.
Or like
you just, can do small talk.
Or it's like you're like, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. And then like, it's a nightmare. I just feel completely, I detest it.
Can you instruct your servers to never use we?
They didn't say we.
No. They never came up. But it's just a little.
Oh, we like, had that conversation.
Oh my God, it's my biggest thing. How are we doing today?
Oh.
Are we enjoying this?
No, that's not allowed.
Have been referring to the restaurant as we?
That's not allowed, is it?
Yeah,
that's,
no.
That's
we don't are have fine. That right now. You are taking our order.
No, but like we the restaurant or the we the bar prepare something in a certain way, that's fine.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But we, including people at the table plus the server, is...
But it is true that I am eating half of your food on the way out. As I'm doing. I mean,
it's true.
That's just, you know, yeah. That's just true.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So yesterday, get this. So you're also totally beholden to your POS system, because there is no, like, the POS system now, because we're not in the days of writing things on pieces of paper and yelling them at the bartenders or yelling them at the cooks to call the orders in. The POS system is literally how the bartender or the chef is told to cook or make your product, right? So if it takes you a long time and there's a problem with the POS, your stuff doesn't even start getting made until the stuff with the POS system is ironed out. So it's like adding a huge amount to the ticket
which
times.
Which POS do you use?
We're Aloha. We're ironing the stuff out. But yesterday...
I think that's what they use here.
Aloha!
They tried switching to Square for a couple weeks and it was like a dismal failure.
Apparently, like, Square is one of those things where it like works for 35 seconds. People are like, oh, why doesn't everyone use this? You know, because it breaks.
It's all anybody was talking about here for weeks.
Yeah. Because once it breaks, you're toast. So yesterday, for some reason, Aloha was like, you know what? Let's wait and see how this whole bar thing works, whether this is going to work out or not.
For them.
Yeah, before, you know, we let you, I don't know, charge credit cards. Like, maybe you should be a cash-only business until, like, you know, we let you process credit cards. You know what I mean? So we're like, oh, crap. So we had to do what's called offline processing. So for those of you that don't know, if the series of tubes known as the internets goes down, you have to process the credit cards offline, and then everything has to be reconciled within 24 hours, right? So otherwise, the person who you charge can be like, I don't remember going to that bar. You know what I mean? And then you're out all the money. So what happens is like we're like, okay. This thing's going to be working within 24 hours. We're going to swipe offline. And when you swipe offline, by the way, you have to press the button like 85 times. Tell a manager that your system doesn't work. Yeah, no crap. Every time I swipe it, tell the manager, I am the goddamn manager.
Yo, I am the manager, B.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, anyway, so like we're swiping it in. And then Aloha was like, you know what? This charge... is more than $100. Maybe it's a fraud. And then it was declining offline charges over $100.
No.
So all the four tops, like anyone that was like, you know, having more food or beverage at their party over $100. And it was just bouncing them. So we were running people's cards four and five times. And they don't understand POS. So that's super embarrassing for the guest, right?
Yeah.
So like you're coming, you're paying, and like all your credit cards are getting declined. You think maybe this is like some sort of you know, a movie situation where your identity's been stolen or like Glenn Close is going to come murder you or kill a rabbit or something.
Oh my God.
And it's like, you're like, and so like it's super embarrassing. So after the fourth time, we were just being like, it's on us. We really apologize. Come back again. And then we had to give them the... Yeah, our comps were banana llamas because the
but would it
card
run
things.
the ticket even without processing?
Yeah, because we run the ticket beforehand and then we close it at the end and then it declines it, so we hit
so
comp it out.
So,
like, Don runs, like, you know, basically jumps through the window outside so he can get on the phone. They've thankfully picked up the phone and they're like, oh yeah, has to be on $100. So then this is the idiots we looked like. We had to sit there and split everyone's check up into sub $100 increments and run their card like
that?
Four or five times. And then you're at the table, they're like, wait. So, did you charge me like 23 times? And we're like, no.
Let me get my glasses out.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. The POS doesn't work. We're jamokes. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
Oh, jeez.
And nobody likes for their check. Look, as soon as they ask for the check, they want it to be quick, smooth, and clean. That's all people want. They got clean. They want to get out. You know what I mean? Ugh.
So, why is it that you had to go under 100?
Because it was set that way.
You know what I mean? And that's not something we can change or knew about. That's feature.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Do you have the number and all that stuff to call the emergency number?
Don has it. Don's going to Tales of the Cocktail. So if any of you want to see a real poop storm.
Oh, man. Peter, we should go back.
Yeah, come like next Monday or Tuesday night.
I can help you serve, Dave.
Let's go and just cause trouble.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah, come and cause trouble. No, Nastasia. Imagine Nastasia's
I'm a great server.
Oh, Nastasia is the worst at understanding what she's good and bad at.
All right. Then.
Get, Peter.
I shouldn't be teaching your son anything, I guess.
That's maybe not what I said. I didn't say you're bad at everything. I didn't say you're bad at everything. I said that, like, okay, here's the other story. I've told this many times on the air. Nastasia comes up to me. Dave, I'm really good at darts. I'm
like, okay.
I'm like, Nastasia.
Oh, I know the dart story.
Yeah, I'm like, Nastasia.
We all know.
There we go. Greatest hits.
Yeah, I'll say it. I'm like, it's the classic thing people can understand right away. She has no sense of whether she's, like, she thinks she's good at certain things.
If I care, you know that. If I care, I do well.
You seem to care enough about darts. You didn't talk to me for, like, 3 days after that the dart incident.
That was our...
She's like, you barely beat me. I was like, yeah, but I also suck.
That's when you gave me my review.
What? No.
Yeah.
That's the day that, like, I irritated your friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't say goodbye, right?
Yeah, I didn't say goodbye. And then Nastasia was so mean. Nastasia was like, he did not say goodbye. He just doesn't know you exist. He didn't.
Oh.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Way back in the day.
He just doesn't think you're worth the air that you breathe.
He's like, you didn't even know you were here. It's like, you know. By the way, Heritage Radio as a bar warming gift has gotten us a fern, because it's a low level plant. That is planted in a replica of the Heritage Radio container studio.
Super cute.
It's adorable.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
We keep ours. Oh, wait. We don't have one.
Zing. Yeah. All right. Anyway.
Hey, you want to take a call?
Yeah, sure. Call her. You're on the air.
Hey, Dave and the crew. How are you doing?
How you doing?
Well, this is AJ from Charleston, South Carolina. I came across something new the other day I wanted to ask you about. Carbonated salsa.
Okay.
You heard of?
No.
I had a jar of paste salsa verde in my fridge, and it was well within its expiration date, but it had been open for about a month. And when I opened it up, I didn't hear any, like, fizzing or anything, but poured into the dish, everything seemed normal. When I tasted it, it had a light alcohol taste.
Right.
And when I looked at it, it had the actual bubbles coming up, and then as I ate it again, the alcohol had like that bite of carbonation, so it was actually pretty like dense. So first off, I wanted to ask if this is something you would think is safe, and I did have two bites of it before deciding maybe I should think about this. But
taste?
It tasted perfectly fine, and it tasted actually better. I liked it that way.
Yeah. Wait, so now your phone cut a little bit out. So it had been opened and then put back in your fridge.
Yes, so it had been open in the refrigerator for about 1 month.
Well, I'm surprised that the Pace Corporation doesn't put benzoate or some sort of stabilizer in it to prevent yeast from going. Did it taste more yeast or does it taste more lactic acid?
More lactic acid.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that they didn't put something to stabilize it in. But I mean, I guess kind of kudos. Years ago, I did a fermented salsa where I did a lactic acid pickling of the tomatoes, and they got like a little fizzy, and then used that to make a salsa, and I thought it was delicious. I loved it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was like, really tasty.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really good. I've never seen it sold in a store, but look, at that acidity, at the acidity level of tomatoes, you know, most salsas are fairly acidic. Anything that grows in that, and they're also, you know, somewhat salty, ain't none of that stuff going to kill you. So if you like the taste of it, I mean, I'd say go for it. Unless it was moldy.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. I always check for that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think the stuff that's growing in that is going to harm you any. In other words, okay. I'm not a food safety microbiology expert, but at my house, if I like the taste of it, I'd eat it.
Gotcha. And then to go along with that, is there a reliable way you think to repeat that just like on its own? Or do you think if I wanted to actually do that, I should dope it with some cultures or lactic acid or whatever to simulate that again?
Yeah, the latter. I would, you could, like, if you have any, a good way to get like a, I mean, obviously every medium is a little bit different, but like before, if I want to kickstart something, if I have some sauerkraut, some like unpasteurized, like live sauerkraut in my, or whatever, in your kitchen that you like, you could like dope a little bit in just to get it started. Although a lot of times those cultures are in pretty bad shape by the time they're in your fridge because they're not like hyperactive. But mm-hmm. it's probably better than nothing. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, or if I start some fresh sauerkraut and then just add some in next time I make it.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Well, the one thing that I would say is that salsa salt levels aren't like as high usually as kraut, so I don't know how stable a lactic versus other like stuff you're going to get in it. You might get other ancillary yeah. stuff, but as long as lactic takes over, I don't think you're going to have anything from a health perspective negative growing in it. You might have off flavors in it, but I don't think you're going to have anything that'll, you know, take you or your family out.
Okay, so if I go by my senses, I can trial and error and maybe make it again.
I mean, someone on the, you know, Dave, see whether anyone out there disagrees with me on the thing, but tomatoes specifically are high acid, and in salsa, you're also typically adding more acid in the form of lime and salt. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly think the chilies are going to have, or the alliums are going to have any major bacteriostatic effect on it, although I know that alliums do have some bactericidal stuff, but I don't think enough to trust to stabilize your product. But I mean, they're a minor component. I would say it's mainly tomatoes, acidic, mm-hmm. and salt, good, and, you know, lime, good. You know what I mean? So I'd say mm-hmm. I would eat it. If it tastes good, I would eat it.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your help. I'm still enjoying the show after years. You're doing great.
Thanks. Well, thanks for listening.
Not me. I'm getting disillusioned.
Yeah.
Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah. You know what?
The thrill is gone. The breaking point was when Dave Arnold slammed your dietary choices. What was it?
What?
I can't remember what it was.
What? His choices?
By the way, I'm a little loopy today, so if I answer things crazy, I don't have very much sleep.
This is an opportune time. Oh, yeah. Oh, me.
I'm not me.
This is the sound. This is okay. When I kvetch to Dave about, oh, I've been working so hard.
I didn't say I was working Dave's hard. Response is always, I didn't say I was working hard. I've been watching Westworld. I've been watching Westworld. Yeah. I haven't been working, just Westworld. Yeah. I'm kidding. You guys suck.
At one point, I think I sent you the Beaker video.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Me.
It's so good.
Me. So, Nastasia, I'm like, oh, Nastasia, I only got 2 hours sleep. Oh, must be nice.
Yes, that's right.
That's the classic old school chef thing.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, I pulled 14 hours.
I'm always doing worse than you.
Yeah, they're like, yo, must be nice, half day.
Yeah.
Oh, we're the worst people in the world. Yeah. We really are. It's like, this is one of the things that needs to go away. It's like, we're talking about like hiring host positions. We really have to staff up. We're understaffed. We thought we could pull it off with fewer staff. And then, you know, look, when a large portion of your staff is in the tip pool, it's not so much saving the house money that's the most important, although obviously the house wants to save money, but you don't want to water the tip pool down too much because then it's not good for your crew and you can't get the same caliber of people to stay because they don't get the same take home. Anyway, I don't know where I got it. So
you need more people.
Oh yeah, they're in the process of staffing up now. I don't know where I even started with that. I don't even know how I got into that. That's how I've done. But the me.
All right, let's take a quick break so you can like recover a little bit.
All right, hold on a second. So Nastasia though.
The thing about it is that
Dave,
you already told the meatball story.
This is what you know what jerk. Eat antelope poop and die, jerk. That's another Wesley Willis quote, like slightly made nicer. But honestly, it's such a, in a way, like hard business. We were talking about hiring the host, and we're like, what is a living wage for someone? Like this person, typically the host is not in the tip pool, right? For a lot of places, they're not in the tip pool. Although Booker and Dax, they were in the tip pool. But like, how much, like they need to be like a smart, friendly, like, you know, well-dressed person. Like, what does that require? They have to live in New York. It's crazy. I don't know I don't know.
The whole industry doesn't. I don't know how it functions.
The industry doesn't work. And that's how you get this dumb stuff where someone's like, and like the messed up thing is that like we're all on the clock. So now we must be paying OT out of our ears. I don't know what it is. But it's like, it's like back in the old days when people weren't following any labor laws or anything like that, especially on the cook side, right? Or side, was like, yeah, they're literally beat each other into the ground and make fun of each other for being reasonable. And it's not cool. But on the other hand, like, you can't charge more for what you're doing because, like, the market is what the market is. And it's one of the things about the industry that I don't know when push comes to shove how it's going to sort out. Like, I just don't know how it's going to work on a fine dining or a, like, high end bar or any of this where service is important. Like, how can you make it work without just grinding people into the earth?
Is it just that the rents are too damn high?
Yeah.
Are you a member of the Rent is Too Damn High party? By the way, people who've never been to New York, there's literally a political party here called The Rent is Too Damn High.
Because, honestly, I mean, that's, like, the one thing you could, I don't know. I mean, because, yeah, I don't know where the breaking point is.
Yeah.
Restaurant owners are not making money. Staff are not being paid anything. Customers are unhappy with how much they're paying.
Well, so the restaurant owners, I think, like, if you get it, I mean, like, I think it really depends. I think the problem is that you try to staff up to do a good job, and it's labor that eats through your budget. So if you can, that's why bars are so genius, because a lot of the labor pools in the tip, which is slightly cheaper for us to run, and your margins are better. So bars are a lot easier, I think, than restaurants. I think people overestimate, you know, on restaurants how much, you know, money you can actually extract out of that business. That's why the old joke says, you want to make a small pile of money, start with a bigger pile of money and open a restaurant. you know what I mean? Like,
heard that a million times.
Oh, I know. It's, yeah, whatever. But, like, I mean, bars are easier, but, I mean, a lot easier. You can, if you get your numbers right. It's all about getting your numbers right. All right, we'll take a break, Dave. Come back. I'll recompose myself. We'll come back with more cooking issues.
Thank you.
So I got some steel cut oats from Bob's Red Mill. Those of you who are in the Cincinnati area might call that, what do they call that? Pinhead oats, I think. And what I like about them, any kind of cracked grain cooking, right? So you think about your grits, your steel cut oats. What's nice about them when they cook up is they retain their grain texture, but because they're cracked, they also get a nice kind of porridgey texture. So if you like grits, right, you will like the stone cut oats. Now, what I was doing was really interesting to me. First of all, I'm a lazy sucker, so I like to put them in a rice cooker. I make the stuff in a rice cooker. You got to be a little bit careful with oats because even more so than other grains like corn, oats tend to really boil up in your rice cooker. So when it boils up, it's going to hit the roof of your rice cooker. But for those of you that have a brain and like scrapple, scrapple is delicious, right? But East Coast scrapple is usually corn, buckwheat, some other stuff, right? Mixed up with kind of pork trimmings and pork offal, right? And cooked into a block and then set and then cut and then you fry it up. It's delicious. But in the middle of the country, they make a product called Goetta. And Goetta is scrapple made with steel cut oats. Now, you can do a quick, easy version of Goetta with Bob's Red Mill steel cut oats by making your favorite kind of meat stock, reinforcing it with whatever meat you want. You don't have to be traditional, anything you like. You can use sausage, you can use pork hocks, whatever. Cook that down in your broth a little bit, and then in your rice cooker, your slow cooker, make the steel cut oats with that broth that you have, right? Make sure it's nice if it's a nice kind of gelatinous broth that's going to help it set up later. Make sure to cook it enough, to cook enough water off. That's the secret of kind of large grain cooking, is making sure you add enough water and making sure that as you cook it down, you cook it so that the inside is fully cooked and the moisture level is low enough when you're done that it's going to set back into a solid block. Right after it's done cooking, you can stir in the meat that you've already, pre-cooked off, set it into a block, cut it and fry it. Go to bobsredmill.com and use the code COOKING25. That's one word, all caps, COOKING25 with the number 2 and the number 5 for 25% off your order. Yeah, and we're back. So, Dave.
Man, that was the never-ending story.
Dave. Turns out I give more cooking advice in the commercial
than on the show.
So, yeah, funny how that works.
Yeah. So, Peter Kim, by the way, pointing out what a low-quality individual I am, says, that I came into the studio, said, "How are you doing?" and immediately put on the headphones.
Because as Peter was responding,
oh, I know. Like, and for me, you know, I'm like, oh, wow, Dave's asking me how I'm doing for the first time in years. Well, you asked Dave, I'm actually, you know, I'm fine. And
I can't hear. I can't hear. I got headphones.
Points at the headphones. Like, I can't hear you, jerk. Trying to talk to me with my headphones on.
Jerk. So there was a famous homeless guy in New Haven in the late 80s, early 90s called the How You Doing Guy. So maybe I'm like him. That was what he was like. It was like a mantra with him. He's like, "How you doing? How you doing? How you doing?" So maybe I'm the new How You Doing Guy.
Like I said to Dave, at least leave open the possibility of hearing the response to "How you doing." That's what I say. Yeah. That's the rule. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
And you don't have to laugh for stand-up comics.
So don't get me started. Do you know that we've had that argument at the bar, not at my bar, but at other people's bars so many times, and there's always a split among whether there is a social obligation to at least look mildly entertained when you're watching a stand-up comedian.
A small smile. Show it, Dave.
That's all it takes, Peter.
I gotta take a photo.
That's great radio.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes.
So I was just telling Dave that I was up in Quebec and Montreal, and I was asking what he thought about Montreal-style bagels.
And I used what Peter did to obliterate a college student once. And they're like, they took Peter out to dinner, and they're like, "How do you like your dinner?" And his response was,
"No." They said, "This is the best restaurant in our town. We're so proud of our food.
And what do you think of it?" And he goes, "Overcooked and underseasoned."
Classic.
And then the kid on the other side goes, "So how do you get into this business?" He's like, "Don't."
took a long drag on his cigarette.
Yeah.
And crushed it out in the kid's eye.
He's like, "Well, he's like, I don't sense you have the moxie."
I was like, what do you want to do in the industry? He's like, "I just would like to cook at Noma or something like that."
Yeah, that's true. That is true. He did say that.
Come on.
I won't even repeat what the chef, Chris Lee, said to someone in the kitchen.
Say it, because it's a food show.
No, it was not appropriate, and it should not be the kind of thing that's said to people in the kitchens. Yeah. But it was the equivalent of, I can't even.
Anyway, Montreal bagels. Overcooked and underseasoned.
Yeah, well, add salt.
Underseasoned in particular.
What's the deal with the no salt? Yeah. By the way, people, if you own some sort of bagel chain, I was at a bagel chain. I won't throw them under the bus because while there's life, there's hope, right? You can change.
Yeah.
Don't put salt, rock salt, bagel salt, pretzel salt on their everything bagels.
Yeah.
The hell is that?
Yeah.
Everything includes salt. It also includes, dirt and stars and everything. But hairs, everything in bagel sense means the onion crap, the garlic crap, the sesame crap, the poppies, and salt. Like, clearly.
Yes.
So if you don't salt your everything bagel.
And do it on both top and bottom of the bagel.
Well, that's interesting. I like to have, on an everything, I like top and bottom, but if I eat a salt bagel, which is what, when I was a kid, was my favorite bagel, I like the fact that one side's a little less salty.
Right.
I want some salt.
I think for everything, though, top and bottom. But I just don't understand the Montreal bagel with no salt. Although, I will say, bizarrely, probably my favorite bagel in New York City is a Montreal bagel, but made in New York City.
Well,
I like black seed bagels a lot.
They add salt.
But they cook it in the wood oven, like in Montreal, which I think is a good combo.
Yeah, I have never eaten a bagel in Montreal. I haven't been in probably 20 years, and I didn't have bagels the last time I was there. How was Montreal? How was the food?
Food is amazing, man. Food is absolutely amazing. And we arrived at this really short four-week season of this berry called the Camarese berry. I don't know if you've heard about this.
No. What's it related to?
It looks like a blueberry, but the inside doesn't look like a blueberry.
What does
it's sort
look
of
like?
An elongated blueberry, and the inside has a lot of little small seeds in it. And it tastes like a blueberry, but crossed with a blackberry and a raspberry. And it's really soft.
A blueberry is an actual berry. And a raspberry is a multiple achene. So,
yes,
which is it?
But I'm telling you that it tastes... But I can tell you that it tastes like both that and the other thing, even though they're both not berries.
Kid, you're a punk. You're never going to make it to Noma.
Well, right. No, to be fair, that was the day that Peter walked in on you.
Oh God, geez, we're Louise. Not talking about this. Move
doing
on.
What?
The best day of my life.
Move on. There's no need to talk about this. The best day.
Go on.
Most people
go
cannot
on.
Specify the single best day of their life.
I actually look.
Best day of Natasha's life. The single best day. She nearly peed herself.
First of all, I'll give you look. If people who have actually listened to. God help you. But people who have listened to the, like all of the episodes of this show have heard the story probably at least twice. I'll give you the very quick synopsis. Oh, we're going up to give a talk, the three of us, museum-related talk. And on the way up, Peter Kim...
Dave drove.
Peter Kim is in the back, like, trying to say he's on an important call to a newspaper that's irrelevant. The equivalent of the Penny Saver. I'm just building it up. And so Nastassi and I start making fun of him for doing this long interview that he was real bent about with the Penny Saver, which is like, you know, like
objection.
Craigslist on paper.
Objection. Wait a minute. Irrelevant to the story.
No, I'm just building it up. Then Peter Kim buys an egg salad sandwich at a gas station.
A fine choice.
And thought that the green was somehow green eggs and ham food coloring instead of the mold.
This is the basis
the
of a Futurama episode.
That he was eating on the way up. And he's like, what? You don't eat? Like, what?
Oh,
you what?
Mister, if it tastes good, I'll eat it.
Hold up. Not mold. And then, and not at a gas station, they're like, well, we found this one in the bathroom, so we restocked it. Anyway, so then we go up there, and like, I'm real tired for whatever reason.
Peter and I are sharing a room.
Peter and I are sharing a room. And
no, not you, Peter. Me and Peter. You have your own room.
Yeah. So anyway, so I go in, and I think the door is automatically closing. I need to hit the bathroom because, of course, I'm driving. So I go in there. My door doesn't automatically close. Nastassi and Peter try to come up. I don't know what the hell.
We're giving you your luggage.
Yes.
Luggages.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but I had both doors open because I ran into the bathroom and the door is open.
Oh, my God.
And so, like, they come into the thing, and I'm like, and I can see there's
horrible.
A mirror. It's like you can see. It's almost like a mirror. So I'm like, put the suitcase in and close the door. And Peter hears, closer.
No, Peter said, no. What did he say? No. And I said, I think he said closer.
No, it was yeah. Close the door. Close the door. And I thought you were saying closer.
Closer.
I put your... Well, we were walking down the hallway up
so
to your
he
room.
Brings the luggage
we're
bringing, into
we're
the
bringing
bathroom.
Your luggage. We're walking up to your room.
And
his
like,
hotel room door is open. So we're like,
jar,
Dave,
a jar.
Open all
open,
the way.
Dave.
So we're
we
like,
you
are
you
okay,
dead.
Dave? Like, it's not normal to have your hotel room door
so
wide
Peter
open.
Peter brings the so luggage like, into the bathroom.
No, I want to bring it into the bathroom.
Dave's like, ow.
And yeah, there was a moment of sheer terror.
Eyes, right?
We locked eyes.
In the mirror.
And then later that evening, just... Peter was in such a bad state of mind. That's when he crushed those kids at that dinner.
Oh yeah.
That
was Peter
the same
was like,
oh, now it all makes
bring
sense.
It up. Never bring it up.
No, and Nastassia is on the floor in the hallway. Just.
I've never seen her so happy as she is right now.
Right now she's so happy. She's smiling like crazy.
All right, right, right. Brandon writes in. I recently received a bottle of amylase from Modernist Pantry to use with my Spinzaw. However, I'm having a hard time finding recipes and procedures online or in the manual. Could you break down a few of her favorite applications? Thanks, Brandon. No. I have not yet figured out the best thing. Look, here's the problem. Like with pectinase enzymes, there are multiple different pectinase enzymes. But we've pretty much honed in on the most kind of broad spectrum one that does kind of what we need. It's Pectinex Ultra SPL. The issue with amylase, and I'll take a look at Modernist Cuisine, Modernist website to see which specific one they're carrying. But the enzymes that you're using for breaking down amylases are a wide different range of ones. So there's the ones that are typically just used. There's alpha and beta amylase. They're used in brewing, and they do different things, right? So in pectinex, you're kind of just chopping pectin up. But even the standard brewing ones, some enzymes cut in the middle of a starch molecule, and some start on the ends and break it down in units. They function in different ways. But it's even further complicated by the fact that the assumption with brewing enzymes is that all the starch has been cooked, right? So you're boiling. You're cooking the starch off and then converting it. So when you're doing like potatoes or anything like this, when you're making like vodka or whatnot, you cook the starch, then the amylase enzymes can attack the starch, right? They can't beforehand. So there's all different kind of amylases that are used at different points. They have different tolerances to heat, different requirements for heat. Some of them you need to heat up. So I don't yet have a good recipe, but I have a bunch of different enzymes I'm working with. We're working on it. I don't yet have a good recipe for take this potato, add this enzyme, do this, and it will go clear. First, before I even worry about that, what I'd like to be able to do is knock the starch out of, let's say, oh, I have an apple, but it's got a little starch in it. How do I knock it out? I have carrot juice. It's got a little starch in it. How do I knock it out? I've got, you know, pick your product that has a little starch. Bananas other than Cavendish that aren't ripe, that are ripe. There are, for instance, very ripe bananas that still have a fairly high starch content and won't clarify, but because they're different varieties. They just retain residual starch. How do you clarify them? Don't know yet. I'm working on it, but as soon as I know, I will tell you, and hopefully I can work on it, you know, more after the bar's up and running. John writes in, hello, Cooking Issues team. Greetings and sending my love from Manila, Philippines. I'm a new fan and listener. I'm listening my way up starting from the first episode. I'm currently on episode 10. So apologies if this question has been asked. Oh, man, do you have a long, nasty road to hoe, my friend? 10. Imagine.
That's like the opposite of having a present to open.
Listening
to all these new episodes.
You're like, it's like a punishment. I once did an art piece where it was a remote control and people controlled hitting me in the face with this machine, and I was trying to box it and hit buttons to disable it. So that's how I would win. So you were just having a remote control pad, and you were trying to strike me, a physical human being, with this kind of like, you know, punching robot. And then I would have to, like, be able to go in and punch it to disable it before you hit me in the face so hard that I quit. That was how it worked. And it was mean. It was like a long pipe with, like a piece of styrofoam on the end of it that would spin around and just hit me in the face and then a jab thing, right? Where the hell am I going with this? I don't know. I don't know.
Long road to hoe, watching episode 10.
So this is like that. It's like you know, hooking yourself up to the punching machine, right? Yeah. You keep going.
Yep.
And why did I do that? Why did you know?
Or like the video you made of yourself with in an elf suit.
But I wasn't actually getting hit there. I just jumped into a pillow and green screened myself getting wood chipped. I don't know if you know this, Peter, but I did not actually jump into a wood chipper. That was a cartoon wood chipper. For those of you that don't know, you can look. I have it posted somewhere on the YouTubes. It's called What I'm Thinking About. And it's an old video I did. I need to get one with better sound quality and better picture. I found one. Anyway, that was just basically, if you want to know what's going through my head at any one time when I'm staring off in the distance and have kind of a vacant semi-smile on my face, this image of a band playing kind of a repetitive tune and me jumping into a wood chipper over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Dinch, dinch. Anyway, so Manila, Philippines.
Oh, nice. Good find. Nice. This is Dave's head.
This is completely terrifying.
Kill me. Kill me. Kill me.
Saturday, he's going to be at the bar.
What?
Jack.
Shram?
No. Yeah.
What?
No.
Jack Inslee?
Mm-hmm.
Jackie Molecules is coming to the bar? Ooh, nice.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee.
Wow, you're quick on the board, my friend. I like that.
Nice. Hey.
So I'm interested in making this is back to John in Manila. I'm interested in making a rum cocktail with coconut milk flavored gelato. Ideally, it would be something like a piña colada. Now I have the piña colada song going through my dang head.
If you like piña coladas?
Yes.
And then they just end up getting together.
Don't do it.
Is that one of those songs that you think about? Like you do all the other stupid songs?
No, only when someone says piña colada, which people
don't say to me.
No,
like the story behind it.
And getting caught in the rain?
No, like how they eventually end up together.
Oh, do they? No, I don't know that. I don't know the whole thing. I just know something making love after midnight.
They put an ad out.
What?
They put an ad out, and then they realized that it was husband and wife, same ad.
Wait, is Nastasia talking to me about a story song?
Yes.
Wow.
You know what? I must be having a stroke. Like, I damaged my neck the other day.
You're actually unconscious on the floor of existing conditions right now.
I'm in Westworld. I'm like, is this real? Is this the future? Is this the past?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't have feeling in my right arm, and Nastasia is talking about a story song. Like,
yeah.
Life as I know it is not the same. Anyway.
But hell yeah! Rolling Stone, Street Fighting Man, G7!
You just hit G8.
If you like piña coladas.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Dave's on the board, going on fire on the board.
Wow.
Shorty fire burning on the dance floor. I'm making, okay.
Last one.
So it's putting gelato in a blender and then shaking it with the juice and booze, the best way to prepare it texture-wise. No, just add everything to the dang blender. Why are you blending the gelato and then shaking it? Just put the whole Megilla into the blender. If you're going to have a blender at the bar anyway, right? Just put the whole sucker in the blender and do it, right? Do it. Don't you think, Stas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you like smoothie drinks, like milkshakey drinks? Here's what I'm going to say about this. You're going to have...
Harold McGee me.
What? Okay. Jesus. All right. What are we going to say, Stas? Go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I do.
Go ahead.
I do like...
Go ahead. You do? Yeah. For real?
Some.
Here's the problem. Here's
I really like your Italiano Stelliano.
Oh, that's good. But I'll talk about that. So it's putting the gelato in a blender and then shaking it with the juice and booze the best way to prepare it. Will adding saline solution or rock salt change the texture? Yeah, because if you add that, it'll be real salty, but it'll also melt faster if you add enough. Any other hazards I've not thought of, John? Here's what I would do. Look, if you're going to make a cocktail, you're going to destroy the texture of the gelato. I'm assuming you're not talking about a float, right? I'm assuming that John's not talking about a float. He's talking about an integrated mixture. When you add alcohol to gelato or ice cream or whatever, like let's say you were doing like the classic Bailey's milkshake, which, you know, that's what Peter puts down every night to get himself to bed.
Bailey's
feeds the baby the milk and then pounds a giant Bailey milkshake directly out of the blender pitcher, just like anyway,
daddy's nightcap.
Yeah, my God, he's like, oh, hong, 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 Bailey's. Anyway, so like if you add the problem with adding too much alcohol to ice cream is it melts it ferociously fast, much faster than adding milk. So you can't use a milkshake recipe and do the same thing because the alcohol is going to drastically lower the freeze point of your mixture. So you can, it's better in a lot of ways to, if you're going to freeze it anyway, is, as Nastasia says, the way that we make our stuff is to just use gelato base. Mix in your alcohol, freeze that as solid as it gets in a bag, and then whiz it in the blender real quick. That's going to be your best texture. But if you actually want it to be a milkshakey texture, you're going to have to use a real low alcohol content because otherwise it's just going to melt ferociously quickly.
Which is why I always look askance at boozy ice cream.
And why you just turn into a milkshake and drink it. Or just eat the ice cream and then just
drink some booze.
Yeah. Eat the ice cream and drink some booze. Yeah.
Or okay. You could do like a root beer float type thing.
I like a root beer float. The problem is like how much foaming it is. It's hard. It's easy at home, but in a restaurant scenario. Remember were you there when we did the balsamic soda fig ice cream?
No.
Float?
No, that's
it was real good. Tasted real good. People are like,
you should make the potato ice cream at the bar.
That's so already we have. I mean, like, I could do it as a one-off, or like when we're doing like fun stuff, I could do it. But you know,
all right, so wrap it up.
Okay. But I
next time.
Well, Nastasia is going to think about this.
I already have. Don't worry.
Do you have stuff to say?
No, I'll be better next week.
Okay, so Nastasia, Sarah is a touring musician. Wants to know about. I'll tell her this. She had a question about going to culinary school and being a vegetarian. So for those of you that, you know, don't know, when you go to cooking school, you have to cook a lot of stuff, right? And they teach you to cook meat and all, you know, all this other stuff. And, yeah, you are tasting a lot of stuff. We had vegetarians who were, and you know, pescatarians, vegetarians, and people who had gluten allergies. And, you know, there's a variety of people who have different, you know, dietary strictures. And, yeah, so any cooking school worth its salt will make accommodations for you based on your dietary restrictions. The only thing I will say is they might be better or worse at it, so it might more or less harm your education, right? So if they're a good school, they will figure out a way to have you have the same kind of experience, especially if you can cook it, right? If you don't mind cooking it but just won't eat it. So I definitely say you can go do that, but just make – I'll talk to them about it, be very frank, and make sure that they're going to be honest with you about how your experience will be different from the rest of the people's experience. But if you're never going to cook meat again because you're going to be a vegetarian special, then it doesn't really much matter how good you get at cooking meat. Although cooking meat is good practice as one of the things that's cooked, because there are other, you know, the cooking school might not cook other meat-like things enough to give you the experience for cooking them, other protein-based things. But I would just have a firm talk. Your other question about dealing with sexism in the kitchen, Nastasia said she will think more about it, and yep, we'll talk about it more next week. I hope also next week to finally get in touch with Chris Young about the modernist Chef Steps pickling question that we didn't get to from 2 weeks ago, and more about backyard cooking and wok stations and tandoors next week, and Japanese knives from Russ on cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.